5:29. Okay, good evening. Welcome to tonight's council meeting and welcome to those people who are watching along at home. My name is Paula Reid, Mayor of Kingborough, and it's my pleasure to welcome you all this evening on Monday the 21st of August 2023. It's 5:30pm, so I now declare this meeting officially open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and in accordance with council's policy, I'll ask the general manager to confirm that the recording has started.
Confirm, Mayor.
Thank you. I wish to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of this land, pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reek, Deputy Mayor Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening we have the General Manager Mr Arnold, the Acting Chief Financial Officer Mr Jones, the Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services Mr Smee, Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, the Acting Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms Salisbury, Manager of Environmental Services, Ms Quinn, Acting Manager Development Services, Mr Andy DeCrew, Team Leader Statutory Planning, Mr Donovan, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. And we have no apologies this evening. So we're on page one, confirmation of minutes. The motion is that the minutes of the open session of council meeting number 15 held on the 7th of August 2023 be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Turning now to page two, workshops held since the last council meeting. We had a workshop last Monday evening, the 14th of August, in relation to Kingborough's draft LPS. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a... does any councillor or any staff member have a declaration of interest? General Manager.
Thank you, Mayor. I have an interest in two items enclosed, the General Manager's performance review and the General Manager's contract. I'll be leaving the chamber.
Thank you. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that councillors would like to move from closed into open session or open into closed session? No, thank you. We don't have any members of the public here, so there will be no questions without notice from the public, but we can have questions on notice that can be submitted by members of the of our community by completing the relevant form on our website or by emailing it to kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. We do have three questions on notice from the public this evening. The first one is in relation to the Browns River Bridge from Mr Tong, with an officer response from Mr Reeve. The second one is in relation to the significant tree register, with an officer's response from Ms Quinn. And the third one is in relation to the Kingston Beach flood study from Mr Tong and an officer's response from Mr Reeve. So that takes us to questions without notice from councillors. Do any councillors have a question without notice? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Ma'am. My first question is about road line markings. And it relates again to Redwood Road and also now Denison Street and Maranoa. My question really is, what is the date for proposed line marking? And can it please be reiterated to me again what that relationship is with the state government when it relates to municipal roads and why there is such a delay with line markings. But specifically now, it's been brought to my attention that Redwood Road and Denison Street, Maranoa as well, are really at a point where there's a concern around safety because of a lack of line markings.
I believe Mr Reeve can help us with that one.
Through you, Mayor, yes, it's a complicated relationship between us and the Department of State Growth. So I guess it's two varying viewpoints. Most councils believe that the responsibility sits with State Growth, and by tradition, State Growth has been putting money into line marking for all roads across the state, whether they be state highways or local government roads. It's not one that's actually been, I guess, sorted out to the satisfaction of both parties, even though it's been raised a number of times, and it will be raised again At the next general meeting at ELGAT, because we do have that as an issue to raise. We have put forward all those particular roads for consideration by state growth, but they weren't funded in the latest round of line marking. I think in terms of those particular roads there, I'm happy to take that one offline and have a chat with our roads engineer in terms of where they might actually fit, particularly in terms of their immediate safety concerns, as to whether or not it's something that we need to actually look at addressing ourselves.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And through you, Mayor, just to follow up to that, in lieu of getting the lines actually marked, if there seems to be ongoing difficulties getting that done in a timely way, would we consider as council to put up street signage, safety signage, like keep left or some kind of other mechanism to help encourage driver awareness of staying on the left side of the road? Would that be useful?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, in a word, no. So line marking has its own particular purpose, and that's just to provide guidance for motorists so they can traverse an area safely. It's not normally replaced with signage. So signage would be something you might use on a temporary basis associated with roadworks or something of that ilk, but not in this particular case.
Thank you. And through you, Mayor, just a question now on a different issue. This now relates, although similar actually, now that I think about it. Targa Tasmania is going ahead in April of next year, and I've looked at the map and it doesn't look like Targa is going on any Kingborough roads. But it was brought to my attention that, well, somebody asked the question, what relationship would council have with the state government if Targa or a similar event takes place on council roads? What arrangement do we have with the state government or the event operator, such as Targa, to prepare, upgrade and repair, where necessary, municipal roads before and after such an event? So if Targa were to come to Kingborough, what do we do to ensure that the community is safe and also has roads that aren't unnecessarily damaged by an event?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, certainly Targa has been down in Kingborough before, so they would normally come through us in terms of identifying the route that they wish to use, in which case we'd make some comments back as to whether that would be appropriate or not appropriate. In terms of damage to any infrastructure, that's to be covered by their own insurances. So, for example, if a car ran off the road there and took out a section of guardrail, then the insurances would cover the cost of actually repairing that guardrail. The wear and tear on the actual surface of the road is not negligible, so that's not really so much of an issue. It's more to do with where a vehicle might lose control and actually damage something on the side of the road.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I must admit I would like to continue the line of questioning, if I may, on the road marking situation for Redwood and Denison. And I have brought this up myself, and I appreciate Councillor Cordova. I must admit I'm not actually clear why it hasn't been done. So there's this dispute between funding. It is a council road. Please correct me if I'm wrong. If it's a council road, given that it's not a DSG road, why hasn't it been line marked out of council maintenance budget? And it's been unlined for quite a while. I don't understand why someone... I don't think anyone in the public's going to listen to this and understand this tug of war. Someone out there is probably shouting at their TV saying, Council, it's your road, can you bleep, bleep, just fix it? What is the answer to those individuals?
Mr. Reeve.
You may, yes, look, it's an anomaly. That's the bottom line. It was raised previously, probably going back in about 2016, by the Audit Department, amongst a few other issues there, which were anomalies as well at the same time. So by custom and tradition, Department of State Growth has always actually managed line marking on not only DSG roads but also on local government roads. Across the state, not just Kingborough. It's not been something that's, even though it's been brought back to the attention of the state government on more than one occasion, it's not been one that actually has been resolved. It's certainly the discussions we've had, because they are looking at actually reviewing their legislation. So we've actually brought that up in some of the officers' discussions to say this is still a cantankerous sore that we've never managed to actually put to bed. I think it's certainly the motion we intend to put to LGAD will provide some sort of response from other councils as well, which will in turn give us something to actually go forth with. So, for example, if there was not support around the table from the other councils, we would probably need to make some decisions on how we might actually manage our own network, bearing in mind it is unlikely to change that the state government will fully fund all the line marking across the state. So then that would be up to a council to make a future decision. I think we would need to step through that discussion at LGAT first, and then that might in itself prompt a further report to council. In terms of the two roads that you've actually mentioned there, putting all that aside there, as I mentioned to Councillor Cordova there, I'm happy to have a look at that one with our roads engineer and see whether there's anything we can actually do in the short term, bearing in mind that some of these other things that I've talked about there are a little bit longer term.
Thank you. If I may, Mayor, just my final follow-up. I think it's important for us to fix it for the safety of the community, to get rid of the complaints and to send DSG the bill and fight over it afterwards. That would be my view, so I really would like you to push that through with your maintenance team, please. Thank you. On indulgence, Mayor, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Antolli. Councillor Gladrat.
Thank you, Mayor. Just on behalf of the Safety Committee who met this afternoon, we're just interested in getting an update on the proposal at the Leslie Vale Quarry, what is actually proposed there in terms of its extension and how the traffic may be impacted.
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Gladewright, HBMI Proprietary Limited, probably better known as Hazel Brothers, are currently in the final stages of an EPA process. That has involved the opportunity for public submissions. And as a result of that, once that process is completed, it's my understanding that HBMI have flagged their intention to lodge a development application with our planning team. They haven't done so as yet.
Further questions? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Has there been a change in application fees for temporary food stalls? I've heard previously that there was no fee and now there's a $20 fee for each event.
Ms. Salisbury.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you. I'm not aware of any change in the fee structure. I can see that we've got Mrs. Quinn over there. I don't know whether she's able to provide any further information.
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, you're correct. There has been a change to the fees that went through with the new fees when it came to council, and it is $20 for a temporary food licence.
Thank you. So just wondering, if an organisation has a monthly event and they have to do an application every month and do the application and pay the fee, is there any way that those organisations, say if they know they've got an event every 12 months, can they just pay an annual fee on that rather than having to do the paperwork every month?
I'm not aware of the details, so happy to take it on notice, but there is definitely an annual fee, but I would think that it would end up costing more. Yeah, because it would be a higher fee, for example, like a food business would have. Yeah, but I'll take it on notice and get the detail.
Thank you. Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. On the council meeting held July 17, council endorsed a submission to the Future of Local Government review which supported the removal of Taruna and Bruny Island from Kingborough. As part of that process, the report that we endorsed presented acknowledged that this would lead to an annual loss of revenue to council of around $4.7 million per annum. Could you just potentially outline what cost-benefit analysis was done and presented to councillors on the impact of not just that lost revenue but the wider picture before making that submission to the local government review?
Sorry, what was the figure that you just quoted?
$4.7 million annual
for loss of
revenue. That was
just Taruna?
No, for both Taruna and Bruny.
Right. Yep, General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Dean, the resolution of council was to support scenario two in the Southern Shore, and in the report that council considered to reach that conclusion, it was suggested that if that were to be pursued, that investigation into potential annexation of Taruna and investigation into the potential establishment of a Bruny Island governance board should form part of that moving forward. The body of the report also highlighted that given the compressed time frame of the Local Government Review Board, it had not been possible to undertake detailed financial analysis, including cost-benefit analysis. And that would be work that would be undertaken should the proposal gather momentum.
And if I can just add to that, in the presentation that the General Manager and I made to the Review Board last Wednesday when we did talk about this issue, I did highlight that, you know, we only had rough cost estimates, raw data, because of the time considerations, but that I believe that if it was something that the government was going to entertain, then they would need to do the underpinning work, but also consider a transitional package to offset against that loss of revenue, that so that it's sort of phased in and it's not in one hit, because even for a larger council in a relatively stable financial position such as ours, that would be a lot to absorb in one go. And there seemed to be an acknowledgement that that would be something that could possibly be entertained.
Thank you. Obviously, it got picked up in the media and, you know, people have come to me and it was raised, obviously, because the headline figure kind of was Kimbra kind of wants Bruny and Taruna out. So I think it's important that if you could potentially just outline what is envisaged moving forward, because that has obviously taken, you know, a lot of people don't engage too deeply in the fact that there was a short time frame. I fully understand, but not everyone does, that the turnaround time from the board was pretty tight and we weren't able to complete that modelling. So potentially just to perhaps ease, I guess, some concerns or queries in the community, could we potentially outline what is going to be happening moving forward in those two scenarios?
Well, we don't know, because it's entirely up to the review board of what they recommend to the state government, and then what the state government decides to do with it is entirely up to them. They may accept some of the recommendations of the board, they may not, they might provide some incentives for councils to go through a transition process, they may not. They've already ruled out the compulsory amalgamation, which obviously is disappointing for us, given that we supported scenario two that would involve a partnership between ourselves and the Huon Valley, which then had that occurred, or if that does occur, that would obviously offset the loss of income and revenue if we were to lose Taruna and Bruny Island. So unfortunately, I think one of the difficulties in the I guess the compressed time frame of the process has been, we don't have the time to do that work. We are at the mercy of whatever the state government decide to do. But the message we've all been giving is that anything that does happen needs to happen. There needs to be a lot of work done on that transition. It's not going to be something that you could bring in you know, a year's time. There would have to be, I imagine, a significant period of work to try and make everything work effectively under a new, you know, redrawn boundaries, if that was the case. Interestingly, since we last discussed this, when we made the decision in the report, I've received, and I believe all councillors have, a letter from the Taruna Community Association supporting the proposal that Taruna move to Hobart City, and they outlined a number of reasons as to why they believe it would be appropriate. They've put in a submission to the review board as well. They see themselves more as a natural fit of... they see the Taruna as an extension of Sandy Bay, and they believe that going there would also follow their patterns of, you know, work and sport and shopping that are all going that direction rather than coming over Bronnet Hill and coming to Kingston. And I've also had a meeting with the Bruny Island Community Association, who have also indicated their support for a board of governance and to not be part of Kingborough Council any longer. So it seems that in terms of the representative associations in those areas, they are in favour of what we have proposed. But like I said, we're now in a situation where we rely on the firstly the recommendations of the board and then what the state government will do with them.
Okay, so in light of those, I appreciate that we've had some supportive correspondence from both those representative organisations. But I think that given that we've put that recommendation through, that submission through, I'm just wondering, we have to assume then that that's in our view that hopefully that proceeds. What would be done prior, would there be anything done prior to that decision? Would we go out to consult beyond just the community association representatives? And would we present any community engagement prior to making or proceeding with that?
The short answer would be no, because we wouldn't know what we would be presenting. We don't know what the final decision of the board and what the final decision of the government would be. So we'd be confusing people by going out and saying, well, this may happen and this is what it would look like. It's not, you don't go out and engage on hypotheticals like that. I don't think that that's in the interests of anybody, because we don't know what sort of time frame they might lay out, and we, you know, we will need to have the time to do the work as to whatever scenario they come up with. Interestingly enough, I note in the reports that have come from the Local Government Review Board, the level of interest in by members of the community in Kingborough on local government reform is exceptionally low. I think there were 8 individual submissions from members of the community in Kingborough to who have had lots of opportunities to comment on any aspect of local government reform, and it's, you know, like, unless you work in it, it's not a very sexy topic, it's not very engaging, and I think that says that people are pretty there's a lack of interest, really, and that is despite us having really tried to get the community to have their say. They just haven't. And in the initial stages, the Local Government Review Board even had pop-up sessions at Channel Court and was trying to engage people, and it's just not, for whatever reason, it seems to be in the small communities that people, the community, have engaged, and I guess they're the small ones where they think they're going to be under threat of amalgamation, and so they've had town hall meetings and they've written submissions, but on a whole, here they haven't.
So just to clarify, we won't be doing, until we hear from the board or from the government, we won't be doing any engagement with the community, or we won't be seeking any engagement with the local councils, whether that would impact, so for example, Hobart City Council, where it might impact. We just sort of wait and see, Pat, at this point.
We do have to wait and see, because I think to do anything other than that would be very confusing, because we really wouldn't know what we were presenting on. It's my understanding that the Local Government Review Board will provide their report to the government on the 31st of October, and then the government is looking to make a reasonably quick response. But I think given the proximity by then to sort of Christmas, I think, you know, we're talking early next year before we have any sort of solid understanding of where all of this would be headed.
Great, thank you.
Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. I just want to ask a question about the Esplanade in Margate, the southern end, so not the Drew Point end, but the other side. As you may or may not know, that provides a bit of a linkage between the walking track from Bundella Road around to Drew Point. And the road that goes through there is quite narrow, and again, at the end of the night, there's no markings or anything on that road. What, if any, plans have we got in the pipeline to augment or upgrade that road?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, certainly nothing in our 5-year plan to actually do anything on that particular road. So, I mean, I guess the latest work we did down in that section through there was to do with protection of the road there from the sea, as compared to anything else, but we hadn't got any other particular plans to do anything, but happy to have a look at it.
Councillor Richardson.
Sorry, thank you. What would be the best way to I guess, formalise having a look at that? Is that something that you can undertake kind of based on this, or is there something else that we should do?
Mr Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. No, that's fine. If it's to do with serviceability in terms of people being able to access it, whether it be for walkers, whether it be for vehicles, whether it be for the condition of the road, whatever it happens to be, that's fine. We can actually assess that based on that merits there. If it's deemed to be something which is something that's of consideration, we can put that for our capital works process.
I think that's probably one for... we previously discussed having a spreadsheet where we could put things in. That's on my to-do list. But that would be something that would be valuable to put in there so that when we come to the budget process that we've got those things top of mind. So, yep. Any further questions without notice? If not, we'll keep moving along. So we're still on page 4. We've got questions on notice from councillors. The first one was from Councillor Street in relation to policing parking on state roads with a response from Mr Basham. The next one was from Councillor Midgley in relation to bike racks at Blackmans Bay with a response from Mr Reeve. Oh, there's only two. So the open session of Council now adjourns and Planning Authority commences at 5:55 PM, which takes us to page 6, Officers' Report... Oh, tongue-tied tonight. Officers' reports to Planning Authority. We've got DA 2023-142, development application for extensions and alterations to dwelling at 47 Nebraska Road, Dens Point, with a recommendation on page 18. Looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Gladright and a seconder in Councillor Bain. Councillor Gladright.
Thank you. So this application is seeking approval for extensions and alterations to the existing dwelling at 47 Nebraska Road in Dens Point. The extensions are to the existing deck and to the existing dining and kitchen and lounge area, and I note that the total proposed additions is less than 20 metres squared. The alterations are to the existing small bedroom to be converted to an ensuite, windows to be replaced, and a new roller door in the garage area. The proposal is consistent with the outcomes of the state policies, including those of the coastal policy. I do note that there were 4 submissions which detailed quite a few different topics: building envelope, bushfire, stormwater, bird strike, space heights, habitable living space heights, and coastal inundation risk. Having read through the report, I feel like the response has been adequate to each of those concerns. The proposal, I note, will not intensify the existing residential use, given the reduction in the number of bedrooms from 3 to 2, and the proposed extension is considered to meet the intent of the desired future character statement in providing a sensitive and contemporary building design. So the application is recommended for approval with 5 conditions, and I'm happy to support it.
Thank you, Councillor Gladright. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Partly for my own education and maybe for members of the public, what was the trigger under the Act that required this to come to Council for a decision?
So it was the fact that there were 4 representations. So anything that's 3 or more representations comes before Council.
Gotcha. Thank you very much. Because the number of...
Discretions?
No.
No.
Amendments? Whatever. I had a mental blank, sorry.
It's all right.
Were quite minimal. So just trying to understand that. But I agree with Councillor Gladright that the concerns from the public appear to have been very adequately explained.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Noting that there has been a few representations, and I just wanted to explore a couple of those. One of the questions regarding the outside the building envelope, and particularly the point where it says such suburban-like design is not in keeping with the village profile of Dens Point, particularly foreshore cottage properties. And I guess just to hear from our experts in the area, so do we have anything in the planning scheme or specific area plans for this area that I guess raises that point?
Who's going to take this? Mr Donovan? Thank you.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you. The zone does contain some broad statements about those sorts of design elements and does mention the village, coastal, rural sort of design desires, but the development standards don't have anything particular. So the report does articulate those and talks about what they have to achieve in terms of the standards. I would say there's a gap between the objective and the standards. Having said that, I think the design's very good, and the discretions that they have achieved are very minor. But I don't agree with the objections either in that it's an undesirable design against the scheme. But just to inform you that, yeah, the zone objectives do talk about those broader aims, but the development standards don't have anything in particular about them.
Great. Thanks for explaining that one. And just there was a point about the living space heights, and it's kind of like they'll be required to obtain building approval and then it will comply with the building standards and then the whole ceiling height around the alternative solution, and then it will be reassessed and things like that. If you can just sort of talk to me, if that will make sense, because I read that and go, I think I know what it means, but if you can just explain that one to me, that'd be great.
Thank you. Mr Donovan.
Through you, Mayor. Perhaps if I start, and maybe our expert next to me can help me. Someone has noted that the ceiling height isn't the standard ceiling height, but what the report does explain is that's correct, but you, like other rules, you can apply for that to be changed or varied, and that will be a normal process through building. It'd be quite common in old houses that they wouldn't comply to modern standards, so there's an avenue for that to be varied. So we recognise that it's not the standard height that it would be at a modern home, but they have an opportunity through their building approval to get that approved and built legally. Yeah. If they didn't get it approved and built legally, I think the report says so, they'd have to come back and get our approval varied.
Yeah. Yep. Great. Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll just start with a couple of questions. The first question is about setbacks. And the report notes that this proposal is compatible, I'm paraphrasing, but compatible with the rest of the dwellings in the surrounding area. And yet the current setback is, the front setback I'm talking about currently is 3.9 metres, and the proposal here is to move that setback to 3.628 metres. So my question, first of all, is about, in order for me to try and assess whether it's compatible with the other dwellings in the surrounding area, are all the other houses on that street less than the acceptable solution for the frontage setback? That is to say, are all the other houses on the street less than 4.5 metres in terms of their primary frontage?
Mr Donovan.
Through you, Mayor. The answer is no. In the area itself, that they have a variety of setbacks. I did include a photo on
page 8.
Yes, thank you very much. Yep. There's one on page 8 and also one on page 11.
Yep.
One on page 11 is probably more appropriate. So there is a variety of frontages, and you'll see them. Some of those are quite close and comparable, and others are larger. So there is a variety of setbacks.
Thank you. And through you, Mayor, just some more follow-up questions, because this is helping me to make a determination. In terms of, and I think it's worth pointing out that aerial photography, certainly to my mind, makes it look like this dwelling is already quite a bit closer. Whether it's comparable, you know, I think it's a matter that we could discuss. But my next question is about building height. So the proposal is for a maximum building height of 6.19 metres, and of course the acceptable solution is a maximum height of 5 metres. But my question is, what is the height of the current dwelling?
Mr Donovan.
Through you, Mayor. The report does contain some drawings showing you those, and if I can refer you to, on page 8, there's a drawing there showing the building envelope, top of the page, figure 2. And also, if we go back then to page 12, there's also another drawing there showing the building. Sorry, Mayor.
It's a bit tricky to read what the building height there is right now.
Yeah.
The total building envelope's 8.5 metres.
So, and I just wanted to refer to page 16 as well, with another elevation showing you the height of the building. So the height of the building is shown there as existing, apart from that raised area of the front where the roof has that sharp angle. So I couldn't give you an actual figure, but at the rear it's about 2.305, and at the front it goes up to that six metre line. So I don't have the actual figure, but that shows you, I guess, in the drawings what the height is.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And so through you, Mayor, is it fair to say, are the other buildings on the street, are they also above the acceptable solution? Are they also in the kind of 6 metre high range, or are they mostly under five?
No,
or under?
Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Donovan.
You'll find in the street that quite a few of the houses are higher than that 5 metre line.
Mm-hmm.
Just to explain, these properties here have that additional height requirement because of the local development code, which applies to properties adjacent to the coast. Normally it would be 8.5.
Ah.
So a normal residential low density area would have an 8.5, and historically that's what we used to do. Mm-hmm. When we brought out local development code, we brought in the higher standard for a whole range of visual and amenity reasons. But the house next door, for example, has a higher roof than the requirement. There are others in the street that have higher height limits historically.
Great, thank you. So through you, Mayor, I think that settles the question of the building height limits, whether or not it's compatible with the surrounding area, and it sounds to me like it is. On the question of setbacks, I think that will be the test here, is whether the proposal meets the performance criteria, because the frontage setback of the acceptable solution is 4.5 metres. This current building, without any changes, is already 3.9, and now this proposal suggests to take it forward to 3.6. And so I guess that's the question about whether or not it causes an unreasonable loss of amenity to adjoining lots due to visual impacts caused by the apparent scale, bulk or proportions of the dwelling, and does it provide separation between dwellings on adjoining lots that is compatible with that in the prevailing area. I think it's worth noting that point about in the implementation strategy on page 9 of the local area objectives, it says that residential amenity is to be maintained through sensitive and contemporary building design, larger lots and vegetated screenings, so that's a desired future character statement. And the local area objectives, I noted down about this idea of a low-key character. So it says future developments and buildings in Dens Point are to be designed to reflect the existing low-key character of the location. So fundamentally, we're now coming down to clause 12.4.2, setbacks and building envelope, A1 and A3, and the question for me is whether or not they meet that performance criteria of not causing any undue or inappropriate issues for the surrounding area. I think it's worth pointing out that I think everybody should have their own renovations where they want them, where they meet the planning scheme. In this case, it falls short of that, and I just wanted to, maybe it's a question or maybe it's just a statement, but currently it's 3.9 metres. So yes, it's true that by changing it and accepting this proposal, it'll go to 3.6 metres, and that is only a change of 0.3 metres. So it's a very small encroachment on that setback. But what if somebody then does it again? And then again, and then again, and then again, and then again. So by 30 centimetres at a time, or 50 or 80 centimetres, you can keep encroaching until you're right at your neighbour's boundary fence, because it's discretionary, or until you're at the front setback, until you're at the front of the road. So for me, the balance here is about maintaining that low-key character, and it is discretionary because it doesn't meet the acceptable solution. It already is quite far forward. It's in a discretionary space at the moment because it's at 3.9 metres, and now this proposal asks to take it even further forward. Having considered all of that and having read the objections, I think it's worth pointing out where this does comply, and it complies in a whole lot of spaces, and I think a lot of the objections are quite rightly dealt with in the report. But to that question about whether the setbacks are consistent with those prevailing in the surrounding area and whether or not this increased encroachment on the setback is appropriate, I have landed in the opinion that it's not. So I'll be voting against. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. The planning application and report that's before us is one that does fit within the planning scheme, and I thank Mr Donovan for the comprehensive report and for his answers to questions this evening, regardless of how out of context or irrelevant they may have been. He's done an excellent job of meeting those questions and concerns. I wouldn't have spoken on this matter, but I don't want people to get the idea that a view such as the one that's been put by Councillor Cordova with respect to discretionary setbacks is in any way persuasive in my view or relevant to this matter. Essentially, what that argument is a logical fallacy. It's the slippery slope fallacy. If we continue to extend by 300 mil every time, then eventually you get to a point where you're in the road reserve. Well, you never get to that point because at some point the planning authority says no. It's always open to us to say no. That's the other side of a discretion, is that at the point where the planning authority decides that enough is enough, it is not the case that the planning authority has to say yes every time we go another 30 centimetres. To suggest that that's a reason for not exercising the discretion when the application otherwise meets the planning, the performance criteria, is a nonsense. Like I said, I would have let the matter go because I think the report speaks for itself, but that matter needed rebutting.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Just before I ask if there are any further contributions, I would just point to page 12 of the report, figure 5, which shows the street elevation of the property in question and the one next door to it, which is not too dissimilar at all. So I don't think that what is being proposed is anything extraordinary for that small amount of move towards that front boundary. So if there are no further speakers, Deputy Mayor, did you want to sum up? No? Okay, I'm going to put the recommendation. It's as moved by Councillor Gladright and seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
Aye.
A show of hands is required. All those in favour? It's Councillors Antolli, Fox, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Richardson, Street, Gladright and Reet. And those against is Councillor Cordova. The motion is carried. The Planning Authority now adjourns and open session of Council commences at 6:11pm. We're now on page 35, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned, and at the time the agenda was compiled, we had not received any more petitions. Still on page 35, officers' reports to council. Short stay accommodation with a recommendation on page 39. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Antolli, a seconder in Councillor Richardson. Councillor Antolli.
Thank you, Mayor. This report, which is back on the council agenda after being deferred from the last one based on a procedural motion, presents an evidence-based reason for the council to align with the public's strongly held view that short-stay accommodation is a vital component of the housing mix. I say public's strongly held view. This week, a post was placed on a prominent Kingra Facebook page soliciting the community's opinion on whether or not the council should regulate short-stay accommodation in our electorate. The sentiment was overwhelmingly summed up by the following statement, and I've cleaned up the statement. Kingra Council, please get your nose out of our personal and financial affairs. This report dispels the false notion that limiting or cancelling short-stay accommodation will help solve rental shortages in Kingra. Of Kingra's approximate 2,600 properties under private rental, only 45, that's 1.7%, are listed as short-stay accommodation in the urban parts of Kingborough. And we don't know if these properties have ever been or ever will be used as private rentals. Areas such as Bruny Island rely heavily on short-stay accommodation to attract tourists where public accommodation is scarce. About half of all short-stay accommodations are on Bruny, providing crucial tourist income to that vital community. The report outlines several options to regulate short-stay accommodation, including differential rating, but it recommends against this, especially on the immediate term or the near term, due to the lack of concrete evidence that it has any effectiveness at all. Instead, the report suggests requesting the government to actively monitor and report on the impacts of short stay on the rental market across the state, and for the council to monitor the situation, leaving all options on the table if it so desires in the future. So I urge my peers to vote in favour of this report without amendment and thereby maintain the trust and the good faith of our electorate who require short stay accommodation to stay in the rental mix. And I have mentioned a couple of council meetings ago how one of my neighbours has given accommodation to a family of four in Taruna whose house was damaged with fire, could not find any accommodation in the greater Hobart area. He put his house up as short stay for them while the repairs are being done so that their son can continue to go to Taruna High. And the insurance company is paying full fee on it, gladly, because this family was in desperation. And so short-stay accommodation is part of the emergency housing mix in this state and in this city. And any interference from council, I believe, would be socially and economically disastrous. That's all. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Further discussion, Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. I'm a former Airbnb host. I had accommodation on my property that was purpose-built for tourism, so it was on the land where I was also living. So I have a really good appreciation of the benefits that tourism bring to Kingborough. I had many, many people come and stay from all over the world, all over Australia, and I would send them down to have coffees in our local cafes and go and shop at the shops and eat at the restaurants and enjoy our municipality. On the flip side to that, it is also quite confronting these days when I go into Hobart City with my children and there are people sitting on the pavements who clearly are in need of a home and are asking for help, and they are really tough conversations that I have with my kids about how that is in existence in our country. So I think that our council do care about the fact that we are in a housing crisis, and that's why we asked for this report to be brought to us. Information allows us to make good decisions, and so that's what we've asked for. And in this instance, this report is indicating that short-stay accommodation isn't indeed having much of an effect on the rental market in Kingborough. There is only a couple of handfuls of houses that are indeed being used for short-stay accommodation that aren't in our main tourist areas where you would expect them to be. And I stand by our housing statement that we recently endorsed, and I believe that the best way that we can have an impact on the rental market is by actioning those things that we have endorsed in that housing statement. I think that it may be a differing situation in our neighbouring councils, and if they had the same report, it might indicate something different. But for us, at this point in time, I don't believe that penalising Airbnb hosts is going to actually have that much effect on the housing crisis. So I thank everybody who was involved in bringing this information to us, and I'm happy to support the recommendation.
Thank you. I'd like to make my contribution now, and I would echo those comments about the staff who have worked on the report. Look, the question of housing availability and affordability is one that governments right across the country are grappling with at the moment. And I don't think that to date anyone has come up with a solution, or should I say solutions, plural, because there isn't a simple fix. If there was a simple fix, then it would have happened. And so it is a very complex matter. And I think it's one of the things that this report has shown to us very clearly is that if you look at the figures for Kingborough and see what the impact that visitor accommodation is having or is not having in our area, that is quite significant. And at point 2.8, it says that, you know, the level of residents renting in Kingborough is far less than in other cities and municipalities around the state. We have only 20% in total of our residents who rent, compared to 26.5% in Launceston and 36% of residents in Glenorchy. So we are different than other areas. We have different demographics as well. Our median income is much higher than in other areas. The population's level of education is much higher. There are all these things that make Kingborough quite unique. And what does make the figures for this unique, as Councillor Antoli has highlighted, is that a large number of the properties that are being used as short-stay accommodation are on Bruny Island, and they're there on Bruny Island supporting the tourism economy on the island. And we know that where there are tourists and there is money going into a local economy, then that helps to support people in employment, particularly young people who can get casual jobs, and it assists those areas. And the fact of the matter is, Kingborough on a whole does not have large-scale tourism accommodation. And so if it wasn't for short-stay accommodation, then as a tourist to southern Tasmania, you would not be able to stay in Kingborough, because we just don't. There are very few hotels in our area. So there is a role that short-stay accommodation does play. And I think we can't let that fact go unsaid. The fact is that we can't make the assumption that the 45 properties that are in our main suburban parts of Kingborough would be actually suitable for long-term rental, or that the owners would want to do that. So I think that there is plenty of work being done across the state, and certainly at local government level. The Local Government Association is putting together a reference group as a result of all the motions that have gone up to LGAT conferences. And as part of that, I understand that Kingborough Council staff have been asked to participate in that. And so there is a lot of work going on, but this does require a whole of statewide approach to it. And I don't think, as this report shows, that the situation here is one that we would need to critically look at some form of mechanism on our own. I would rather look at this in a more holistic way. So I thank staff for the report, and I'm happy to support the recommendation as outlined. Councillor Fox, you had your light on earlier. Did you want to go, and then I'll go to Councillor Fox?
Yes, I'm getting a bit overwhelmed because I only just wanted to make a small comment. I think the report is excellent, and I do support the motion. I am concerned, though, that as an owner of a rental house, that the land tax that I am paying is absolutely enormous because it's based on valuation. And there is a lot of pressure for people to ask for higher rentals, which communities can't afford, just to pay for that land tax, $7,000 a year. So I do think there should be a consideration of a difference between a house that is used for low-income people for a rental property and the land tax that house generates, compared to a short-stay B&B that can charge a lot more and can afford that land tax. And that's just a small point I want to make. And I do also know that even though Bruny Island has a lot of short-term accommodation, the people who work on Bruny Island find it very difficult to find accommodation. And a lot of them are catching the ferry every single day in order to do their work, when they'd much rather be renting on Bruni, and they can't afford it, and the houses just aren't there. So it's not all good having short-term accommodation. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to move an amendment, if I may, that Council considers differential rating for land used as short-stay accommodation in Kingborough in the 24-25 budget.
Okay, so, all right, Councillor Cordova has moved that. Can we just wait till we've got it up on the screen? And I'm looking for a seconder, and I've got a seconder in Councillor Midgley. So, Councillor Cordova on the amendment.
Thank you, Mayor. So I'm deliberately not being prescriptive in this amendment about how much we should increase or, for that matter, change the rating for land used as short-stay accommodation in Kingborough. But what this amendment does do is provide Council with the flexibility to act. Certainly we know that all across this country and indeed many others, local municipalities and other relevant authorities and jurisdictions have actually clamped down on the unmitigated and unfettered use of whole home short stay accommodation because they know of the deleterious effects that it has on the long-term rental market. And we also know that closer to home here at Hobart City Council, they have made substantial changes with differential rating. I think that it's important to know what the theory is behind this, and there's been a lot of conversation about Bruni Island so far, but it's worth noting that people live on Bruni Island too, and the people who work on Bruni Island also need places to live and rent. So fundamentally, a rental vacancy rate of less than 3% represents a rental market that is unbalanced. It represents a rental market that is unfavourable to renters and favourable to landlords, in which rental yields will continue to increase, and people on low incomes, including the elderly, the young, people experiencing disability, new migrants, First Nations people, people experiencing vulnerability, they will continue to be priced out of the rental market and become at risk of homelessness. Now, of course, this amendment is not the panacea to that. It's not the silver bullet. But it is an evidence-based approach that has been recognised, whether it's in Byron, in Brisbane, in Hobart. Many authorities have grappled with this, and so all this amendment is doing is putting the item on the agenda for our next budget. Tasmania has moved from the state with the lowest homelessness rate to the fourth highest. And in the 2021 census, there were a total of 2,350 people in Tasmania who were homeless, and that's up from 1,622 in 2016. So that represented an increase of 44.8% of people experiencing homelessness in this state in the 5 years since 2017. Now, how does this affect Kingborough? We've heard people saying that Kingborough is different from Hobart. Well, it is different from Hobart. In the postcode 7000, that's the Hobart postcode, as of June 2023, their residential vacancy rate was 2.2%. Meanwhile, in the postcode 7050, Kingston Beach and Kingston, we have a rental vacancy rate of just 0.9%. Now, bear in mind that according to Shelter Tasmania's report, anything less than a 1% residential vacancy rate results in double-digit rent increases. And 91.6% of all Airbnbs in Kingborough are whole-dwelling entire homes or apartments. So there is an issue, and in fact, in Kingborough, in parts of Kingborough, the issue is worse than in parts of Hobart, and I think it's worth reflecting on that. But also, it's worth reflecting on the idea that Airbnbs specifically are crucial to the economic development of places like Bruni Island. There's been no mention of the lack of sufficient commercial accommodation and hotels and bed and breakfasts and motels and inns on Bruni Island. Now, why is that, that they don't have sufficient numbers? And what econometric analysis has been done about the number of hospitality workers and janitors and plumbers and shuttle bus drivers and bar staff that we would get if there was indeed an appropriate number of commercially regulated accommodation areas on places like Bruni Island. And we've heard, for example, that this would have a catastrophic effect on our economy. I just don't think that there is any evidence for that. We've also heard that this would be a penalty to people operating Airbnbs. When you're operating a business, is it a penalty to pay the same rates as other businesses in your sector? So if a homeowner who has some of their house or their entire dwelling as an investor on Airbnb, if they have to pay the same rates as a commercial hotel, is that a penalty or is that just equity? Now, we're not trying to penalise Airbnb owners. Many of us have connections. I've stayed at Airbnbs. I've had family members rent out portions of their home. Many people are struggling to make ends meet, including those people who own homes that they're using for short-stay accommodation. But where it comes to whole home short-stay accommodation, this has deleterious... I request just one more minute to finish.
I've got a seconder for that by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Show of hands is required. All those in favour? Is Councillors Fox, Cordova, Dean, Midgley, Street and Gladewright. All those against? Is Councillors Antoli, Bain, Richardson and Reid. So you have one more minute.
Thank you, ma'am. The rental crisis in a Kingborough postcode is worse than in the city of Hobart, and yet the city of Hobart has got a differential rating system for short-stay accommodation. In our postcode here in Kingborough, it is doubly as bad as Hobart. They've gone a different route, and all I'm asking is that we keep our minds open to going down a similar route when the time comes for us to deliberate on our next year's budget. Hobart City Council looked at the evidence and they realised that they need to charge houses that are operating as businesses as though they were businesses. Now, I don't think that that is penalising those investors. I think it's just charging them the same commercial rates as people in a similar sector. And I don't think that that's unfair. I don't think that that's a penalty. But what it is doing is it's pulling a lever that local government does have to impact the long-term rental market and to impact the housing crisis in a positive way, to actually put people into homes and put people back into the long-term rental market. And for that reason, I urge you to support my amendment. Thank you.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. My remarks on this amendment will be brief because I think in light of the report that we have before us, that's all they deserve. I struggle to see how an amendment such as this could be moved with a report in front of us as it is. We have a report in front of us that says that short-stay accommodation in Kingborough is a minuscule proportion of the total rental mix. It says that the almost half of all short-stay accommodation is situated on Bruny Island, which is an area that is heavily reliant on those short-stay accommodation properties being available. The janitors and hospitality workers and tourism workers that Councillor Cordova refers to would not have a job on Bruny Island, let alone need to find a place to live, were it not for the opportunities that that short-stay accommodation on Bruny Island supports. Furthermore, because of the nature of Bruny Island, the number of areas that are available for commercial short-stay accommodation are very limited. It's no surprise that we're in a situation where Bruny Island is heavily reliant on residential short-stay accommodation to service that need. And frankly, after the development application that we've just seen on Bruny Island and the attitude of the mover of the amendment towards that, I can't help but think...
Point of order relevance. That
I'll seek some advice from the General Manager because I temporarily phased out, not that I wasn't enjoying your contribution, but I have no idea what you said just then that he's taken a point of order on, if I'm really honest. Okay, apparently you hadn't finished your sentence.
I hadn't. You're quite right.
Sorry.
I can't help but think, Mayor, that if commercial short-stay accommodation was proposed for Bruny Island, the mover of the amendment would be one of the first lining up against it as well. So I just... Only the mover of this motion could look at that report.
Sorry, point of order. Offence. I'm taking offence.
To what?
To saying that if there was a commercial accommodation DA, that I would be the first against it. I mean, firstly, that's a hypothetical, and secondly, it's offensive to say that I'm against it. Like, what proposal is the councillor... To what proposal is the councillor referring? It's offensive to remark okay. in that way.
I'll happily withdraw. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. I
think before I was interrupted, what I was saying was that... only the mover of this motion could look at the report that is before us and think that penalising short-stay accommodation operators with increased rates, which, make no mistake, it can be sugar-coated all you want, but that is what's being suggested here, is in any way a solution to what is, as Councillor Glade rightly pointed out, a terrible problem in the Greater Hobart rental market. But the reason that you know that what's being proposed won't have any impact there is that every example that the mover gave was for outside of Kingborough. And that's enough to simply say this is not relevant. We need to be focusing on the things that we can do. We need to be focusing on our housing statement. We need to be focusing very clearly on the levers that we can pull that will actually make a difference and move on.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, and thanks everybody for sharing. It's great that we can have such a diversity of views and opinions to what is sensitive topic in ways, because it is related, I guess, in regards to what we as a local government can do in regards to the housing crisis. And as Councillor Glade Wright said, you know, 20 years ago when I moved to Hobart, to Tasmania, we did not see the housing at our doorstep like we are doing now. So there is definitely looking at solutions, and across Australia, as Councillor Cordova said, there is a lot of move for local governments to look at different solutions and ideas. Just wanted to thank you, staff, very much for the time taken to write the report and the research, and I echo the sentiments on this report and what's been put before us tonight. Also just comments in regards to what Councillor Fox said about Bruny Island and people being able to live there and work. I do know young people who could not actually find rental properties on Bruny Island who wanted to work there and live because there was just nothing available within their price range. Of course, rental properties are going up, but there is that number of Airbnb properties that are increasing and will continue to increase. 7 years ago, I was in Wanaka skiing at Cardrona, and many of the young people working in the ski village could not get rental, you know, half an hour away in Wanaka because of the increasing number of Airbnbs. And I kind of see Bruny is slowly moving, I guess, in that direction. So I think it is something that we need to keep mindful of. And as Councillor Cordova has said, we're not setting in precedent, but we are. Things do change, and budget deliberations, we can put forward all sorts of things for budget deliberations. So I'm happy that we don't just close the book and leave it as it is, that we do have an open mind in the next budget deliberation. We might have exactly the same conversation and we won't go anywhere, but I just think it's important to keep this on the agenda, to have a conversation, to see if there has at all been any movement in the area and to have that discussion. I did some research around what some other local government areas are doing. Like, there's the Brisbane City Council is looking at a changes to their rates. You know, we know, you've probably seen the media around Byron Bay, and they're looking at capping the number of nights that can be available for Airbnbs. Some councils didn't even have to sort of register their Airbnb property and things like that. Other councils are having, like, putting signs out the front of Airbnbs with actually the person that can be called if there is any noise and that kind of a thing, and they have to respond within 12 hours. So I guess if we look at all of Australia around what local councils are doing, they are doing things. And I guess that's what it's about. This amendment is about doing a thing, keeping an open mind and having that discussion when it comes to the budget next year. So that's why I'm supporting it.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Next I've got Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't support this amendment for two logical reasons, in my view. The first is that the amendment is asking us to consider, at the budget next year, differential rating, which is explicitly mentioned in the report as being an option that we can consider any time at any point. I do not understand why, based on the fact we've agreed as councillors not to make motions that infers budgetary discussion or decisions before the budgetary discussion or decision period. So this essentially is a violation of a rule that we've made amongst ourselves that we will not set expectation in the public of making budgetary motions, amendments or decisions before the actual public consultation period. The other issue I have, of course, is that the report simply says there is no immediate issue. With differential rating, there's no evidence it'll have any effect. So we need an evidence-based reason why this needs to be inserted into a report that says it's always on the table. So we're going around in circles. I don't understand it, the relevance, and I won't be voting for it.
Thank you. Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, this is a hotly contested issue. I actually think this is an interesting amendment, and I think it's one that we could actually consider. I don't obviously agree with Councillor Antelli's interpretation of what we pass in terms of budgetary decisions. We were talking about capital works projects in that context. But I do agree with Councillor Street that this isn't the perfect timing for us to consider this amendment. But now that it's before us, we as councillors have to discuss and consider everything with an open mind. And that's what it is right now. It's before us, so we need to consider it. The amendment gives us the opportunity to consider the permutations of having a differential rating system in Kingborough next year. That is an important point to stress. This only calls on us to consider a differential rate as part of next year's budget. It does not tie us into any change to our rating system. What it does, it gives us an opportunity to look at our rating system and just check, is it fair and equitable for residents by ensuring we can actually continue to provide high-quality services and infrastructure for our residents. For the councils around Australia, who some of us have already mentioned, that have applied a differential rating system for short-stay businesses, the motivating factor tends to be two things. One is to help disincentivise houses being converted into from rentals into short-stay accommodation. And based on this rationale, the report suggests that based on data from last year, it wouldn't make a huge impact. So I'm very much in agreement with those other councillors that make this point. The second reason, though, for applying a differential rating system is one that I want us to actually really consider. And I really encourage people just now to think about this with an open mind. And that's because this means that owners of residential land using it for commercial purposes contribute to the provisions and facilities that are associated with that use. This is a really important point and is exactly why councils have a commercial rate or any other rate that we've applied. In our case, we have hundreds of short-stay businesses operating on Bruny Island, which means our infrastructure and services are under even greater strain. This is on an island which you all know has traditionally been home to shacks and used only for part of the year from homeowners. So by exploring additional revenue streams, we might be able to better maintain services, particularly on Bruny, and do it in a way that means that those tourists who come to enjoy Bruny, it's an awesome place, that they contribute a bit more fairly. By not ruling it out now, it actually allows us some time to further monitor the situation here and next door in Hobart, and it means that we can explore it in a little bit more depth and give it some serious consideration. And then we might decide we won't go ahead with that. That's not appropriate for Kingborough because we are a unique municipality. But I believe it would be fiscally responsible for us as councillors to at least consider the idea, and so therefore right now I will be supporting this amendment.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Are there any further contributions on the amendment? If not, I'll make my contribution on the amendment. I don't think it's as simple as having a differential rating system for short stay accommodation, because the experiences in other places would suggest that it is not something that has made a significant impact on either the availability of rental properties for long-term rental or on the affordability of rentals. In fact, when Brisbane City Council in June last year was the first one to create a different rate, and their equivalent of TASCOS, so the Queensland Association of Council of Social Services, they said It's really important that local government has robust housing policies, but if you look at this closely, what it means is that those investors would pay about an extra $10 a week to list their homes on Airbnb. We haven't seen any modelling that shows that that type of fee would actually change people's behaviour and put them back in the housing market. So unless you were going to actually come up with a system that was going to put a 1,000% multiplier on short stay accommodation, $10 a week, I'm sure, considering the economics of it, is not going to be enough of a disincentive. So where do you stop? At what time do you then stop? And how do you then not penalise those properties on Bruny Island that are providing a valuable service to the tourism on the island? I noticed that the Grattan Institute have been doing some work on this as well, and they say that the hot rental market is a broad-based phenomena, so they don't believe that measures to shift short stay stock, that's hard to say, on the long-term rental market would make any difference nationwide. They've ruled that out. And interestingly enough, the Queensland government have only the week before last published a widespread review on short-term accommodation. And the review found short-term rentals have a limited impact on rental affordability. The review found no clear alignment between the suburbs with the highest rent increases and the percentage of dwellings devoted to short-term rental. And that is from an area that has a significant number of short-term rental because of the tourism that is associated with some of those. And they do also, their review did point out, a one-size-fits-all solution could miss the mark in addressing local challenges and create other issues. One of the things that I found when I was looking into this is that if you look at the 2021 census, it showed that there were actually, in Kingborough, there were 1,680 unoccupied private dwellings in Kingborough on the night of the census. So if we're going to actually start to look at the issue, we need to start to think a bit more broadly and not just target short stay accommodation, but say, well, what about those vacant properties, because we all know of vacant properties around the place. And some of them may be that they are, you know, somebody's, it's a part of an estate and the family haven't decided what to do with it, but there may be other reasons why those properties are vacant, and they could be ones that could be put onto the long-term rental market. So Councillor Fox has already mentioned land tax. Maybe that is a solution that the state government needs to look at, that you do have a differential rating system for of land tax for short-stay accommodation. But once again, we have to get the balance right so that we're not then unduly impacting tourism, Airbnbs and other short-stay accommodations that support tourism in those parts of the municipality that rely on that. So this is not a quick fix. I don't support the amendment because I don't believe that it is backed up by the facts that the report has presented and by the experiences that we've seen in other states. The Queensland government's report makes very interesting reading. So I believe that we need to allow the work that the Local Government Association is going to do with the state government to take its course. Because I think to do anything other than that would be, at the moment, jumping at shadows and not relying on the facts. So I'm not supporting the amendment. Are there any further contributions on the amendment? If not, Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor. It's been an interesting discussion, and I think at the end of it, I've realised that what we're trying to do here is not a silver bullet or a panacea, but it is pulling one lever that a local government does have in order to take some action on the housing crisis. We've moved our housing statement, and we've witnessed what's been happening in other jurisdictions, and now we have an opportunity to consider a more equitable, a more fair, and a pathway, as was pointed out by Councillor Dean, a pathway to greater revenue for council, which will mean greater services for those ratepayers who are living in our municipality. So we have heard examples in contradistinction to the evidence that I presented about how in another jurisdiction the rate increase was insufficient to actually curb whole home short stay accommodation. I think the figures used were that it was just an increase of $10 per week. This amendment is deliberately non-prescriptive about whether we should double the rates or triple the rates or quadruple the rates. It's deliberately non-prescriptive because it asks us to consider a differential rating policy, and we can make up our minds as a council about what we think is fair. Should unregulated Airbnbs be paying the same as a regulated hotel? That's a question that we can ask. We've heard that in another jurisdiction there wasn't an exact correlation between differential rating and increasing the vacancy rate. And then we heard that maybe we should consider a vacant property levy, or that vacant property taxes were the way to go. Well, that was music to my ears. I think that that's a great idea, and if council has a lever to deal with empty houses in this municipality, I think people should be living in houses, and I think housing is a human right. I think it's a fundamental human right, and I think in a wealthy society like ours, one of the richest countries in the world and the richest time in human history, I think we can put people in houses, and if that means dealing with it through a vacant property proposal, then I welcome that idea, and I'm sure if the Mayor wanted to add that to my amendment, the mover and the seconder would probably accept that. But in the meantime, let's take some action to bring more equity to this situation. Let's take some action to ameliorate the housing crisis, and let's keep an open mind to what benefits that might bring all ratepayers by having a more fair and even playing field for accommodation operators throughout the municipality. And fundamentally, let's treat housing as a human right and do everything that we possibly can to put more people into more houses in Kingborough. I urge you to support the amendment. Thank you.
I'll put the amendment now that has been put forward by Councillor Cordova, which is that Council considers differential rating for land used as short stay accommodation in Kingborough in the 24-25 budget. It was moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
No.
A show of hands is required. All those in favour? Is Councillors Fox, Cordova, Dean and Midgley. Against? Is Councillors Antoli, Bain, Richardson, Street, Glade Wright and Reet. The amendment is lost. We're back on the substantive motion. So far we've had one, two, three, five speakers on the substantive motion. No, six. Does anybody?
Four.
No, and myself. That's five. Yep, I spoke on the substantive. Councillor Glade Wright, Councillor Fox, Councillor Cordova and myself.
I haven't spoken.
Oh, you didn't speak on the substantial. Okay, so we're back on the substantial. Beg your pardon. Contributions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. This report, I'd like at the outset to thank the staff for the work that's gone into this report and to all of my colleagues for considering this important topic. The report did offer a few different options for discouraging or limiting short stay accommodation, and I think it's worth drawing attention to the report mentioning IPD 6 and how this, quote, makes it difficult for planning authorities to reject an application for a permit for visitor accommodation, end quote. And the report also mentions setting caps on the number of short stay accommodation permits or the number of nights that a residence can be used for short stay accommodation. These are all worthy ideas to pursue, and they have been successful in other areas. Hobart City Council looked at the evidence and they determined the necessity to charge houses that were operating as businesses a commercial rate, and that's a decision that's been recently made. They wanted to charge them a commercial rate of rent in order to dissuade the exploitation of the private long-term rental market and the gouging of renters, and to help the hotel and tourism accommodation businesses compete on a fairer playing field. Now, the Shelter Tasmania report found that the removal of just 195 properties from short stay to long-term rental would have doubled the residential vacancy rate in Hobart, leading to a reduction in rental price increases from double-digit annual rent increases to single-digit. In Greater Hobart, a move from a residential vacancy rate of 2%, where rent rises will be manageable, to 1%, where rent rises are likely to be double-digit, would only require the withdrawal of 195 properties onto the long-term rental market. Here in Kingborough, we have a number of properties, as we've discussed, with places like Bruny Island, where people are already struggling to find accommodation close to where they work, and it's disjointing and making it difficult for communities to thrive. There are stories from Byron Bay where restaurants were closing for they weren't being able to open five nights a week because they just couldn't find the staff who lived close enough they couldn't find the hospitality workers because living in that area is so expensive. And Bruny Island risks suffering this same fate. There are a lot of flow-on effects that the use of whole home short-stay accommodation is having, not just on the people who are struggling to find a home, but also on the economy at large and social cohesion. So I think that whilst the report didn't, in my opinion, go as far as it possibly could with some of the options in terms of having some more specificity around which jurisdictions have chosen which option, whether that's planning scheme amendments, rental caps, capping the number of nights, or indeed differential rating, I do think where this report is very helpful is that it correctly identifies the lack of data and the lack of state government involvement in collecting and compiling and disseminating this data. So I think that the council does have a role. We have an important platform that we can use our voice to affect change, and some of that change will come from the state government, some of that change will come from the federal government, and I fervently believe that a lot of that change can come from right here in this room. Once again, I thank everybody for their consideration. I think that this is not the end. I think that this is just the beginning of our discussion around short-stay accommodation and what it means for this municipality. I think it's just the beginning of a conversation about what the economy of Kingborough should look like and what a fair and equitable society is. There should be more econometric analysis done about the impact of short-stay accommodation on our economy. Does it bring the benefits that have been purported, or is there actually a better way to run our society in order to achieve economic gains and an improved material standard of living? Can we do all of those things whilst making sure that every person in Kingborough has a warm, safe and secure place to call home? I believe we can do that. I believe we can have a thriving economy and a place where nobody experiences homelessness. And I think we should all be striving for that same goal. Thank you.
Next, I've got Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, in terms of the recommended approach that's on page 39, I really agree. I think we should keep monitoring this situation, and I've said to the amendment before, if we were to consider any changes, it probably should be a differential rating system. But generally, very much agree, and the report's great. I do have some questions, though, just to drill down, because the key number in the report is this number of 45, and that's the number of short-stay properties in urban Kingborough that we think might be otherwise suitable for long-term rentals.
No. We don't know that they would be suitable.
But it's suggesting in there that they are that's the critical number, the 45
the
properties.
The 45, but yep. We don't know whether they would be suitable or not.
I didn't say that.
Sorry, I thought you said...
That may be suitable. That's the target. That's the key figure in here, that 45.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, around that 45 number, could we just get an update? Because this is from September... a year ago, basically. What's that figure sitting at now? And I guess a bit of a follow-up. Has that increased, decreased? Because I think it's an important point. It would be interesting, I think, for everyone around the table and the community to know, oh, it's gone backwards, or it's gone, you know, higher. Thank you.
So we don't have any updated data from the state government because, as the report indicates, they haven't published... They're collecting the data. They haven't published an update since September 2022. But if you turn to the Development Services Quarterly Report on page 47 of the agenda, there is an update in relation to the number of visitor accommodations approved for 22-23, and that shows that there are about 45, I think, or 44 properties, and half of those were on Bruny Island. Some of them were in smaller areas like Kettering, Woodbridge, Birches Bay and Howden, and there were 18 in total that were in Kingston and Blackmans Bay. But of those 18, we don't know. They're not all going to be whole houses. So this doesn't have that level of detail, but it is deemed as short-stay accommodation, whether it be part of a property like a room or a granny flat, or a whole house. So of the 18 that have additional ones that have come online that we've had before us on mainland Kingborough, a percentage of those will be whole houses and a percentage will be a room that somebody's renting out as additional income.
So it doesn't quite answer the question about where it's been tracking in the first few years, because I know that as an organisation we have obviously kept records, as you've pointed out on page 47. We obviously know the approvals as they come in because we process them, right? But I don't know where this exactly is in terms of how we've gone tracked over recent years. So I guess just answer that question to begin with.
Ms. Salisbury.
Through you, Mayor. So there's a couple of sources of information that are referred to in the report, and where we can glean a bit of a picture. The figure you referred to, the 45, that comes out of the Department of Justice figures. So that's short stay accommodations that are recorded under the new short stay accommodation legislation. That data, the Mayor is right, does run well behind. And then we have our own planning data, which is reflected in the Development Services report. Now we're now keeping that so that we will be able to see over time how many of those applications are increasing or decreasing, and where those applications are coming from. It would be possible for us to go back in time and plot that, but we haven't done that at this point in time.
Okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Dean.
Interestingly, this is based on September data, but the government has released the following quarter up until December of last year, which is a shame that we're a little bit behind. And in that data from that quarter, it shows that we've increased by 5%. It's an extra 5% in 3 months that has gone up. So it's unfortunate that we don't have a full data set that's up to date. So my follow-up question is, because this is what comes to the recommendation, isn't it? It's about monitoring this. Why do we know why we are so far behind? And given that we have some internal process, what is, I guess, the threshold for us to determine when we might actually start taking action? Because we've got a figure of 45 that's now a year old, but then we've got some updated data. So if I could just potentially get a bit of insight into that, that'd be great.
Can I just, before I throw to Ms. Salisbury, can I just also make the point that you're looking at one side of the equation there. If you're just talking about we need to know, how many applications we're receiving and are being approved in relation to short stay accommodation, is one side of... No, well, don't shake your head.
That's not what I'm asking.
I haven't finished, Councillor Dean.
Why do I have to shake my head?
Don't shake your head when I haven't finished the sentence. You're trying to tell me I'm wrong when I haven't finished my sentence. Okay? You're looking at one side of the equation because it's very well to look at short stay accommodation and how many applications we're getting, but at the same time, we also then don't know what other rental properties, long-term rental properties, are coming online. For example, are you aware that in early next year there will be 51 rental properties coming online just up the road here on the Channel Highway? Or that entire development is going to be put out for long-term rental. So all of a sudden there's going to be an injection of 51 long-term rental units available in Kingborough. Now, given that only 17% of the Kingborough population actually rent, that is a significant boost to the rental stocks in Kingborough. So that's just... There are two sides of the equation. Ms. Salisbury, would you like to add anything further?
Thank you, Mayor, and through you. Obviously, we are dependent on the timing of the Department of Justice information coming through to us, and it does run late. You are correct. We now have, I think, information up to the end of 2022. But I think as part of the Council's commitment in its housing commitment, it is about keeping abreast of changes that are happening, and part of that will be keeping an eye on the Department of Justice information and also our own planning applications as they come through too, so that we're in a much better position at any point in time to know exactly what the situation is.
Councillor Dean.
Terrific. I'll just start by reinstating my ability to disagree, whether verbally or not verbally, non-verbally. And the reason for that was because I was not asking about approvals, applications, sorry. I'm asking about the actual data that the government holds in terms of the number we have, because I understand we could approve 50, but then also 60 could lapse or they could potentially not follow through with that. So I'm not talking about approvals, and that's why I was shaking my head. The point of line of my questioning here is actually just to really nail down and make sure that we're informed in terms of our decision making and getting the full data set here. There is no hidden agenda behind my questioning, which potentially might be coming through. That is not the case. I'm trying to make sure that us as the 10 councillors can make an informed decision, and that what I was trying to get at is whether the growth, there is a growth or a decrease in the number that we're looking at, because it's clear from the report that the 45 is the key figure that we are focused on this report. So I'm just going to restate that. I will be supporting this the recommendation as well. I do believe we need to monitor this more closely. It's a shame that the data takes so long to get out of from the government. I think we're all in agreement with that. And I think, if anything, the great thing about the report, the two things in this report, is one, that we'll be able to advocate on that, but I think it's also given the community the first kind of insight into where these actually are, because prior to this, the people in the community might have seen the figure that gets released quarterly as 489 or something it was in December of last year, and start to panic. And so the best thing that's come out of this report, as the Mayor's pointed out, is that the vast majority of these are on Bruni, and the 45 is obviously a somewhat smaller and insignificant number when you look at the broader scheme of things. So I think the fact that we've got this report before us and that it's been presented by staff and it's really well written is a really good thing. So I will be supporting the recommendation. And I thank you for answering my questions.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Are there any further contributions back on the substantive motion? If not, I will ask, it's been so long, I can't remember. Councillor Antoli, would you like to sum up? Okay, I'm going to put is that a change of mind?
No, I was just going to say no, thank you. I just realised I didn't hit the mic on.
Thank you. I will put the recommendation. It's moved by Councillor Antoli, seconded by Councillor Richardson. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? After all that, motion carried unanimously. Okay, we are moving on. Thank you very much to staff for that. We're moving on now to the Development Services Quarterly Report on page 40 with a recommendation on page 50. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I always appreciate this report. It keeps us up to date on many important issues, and it really covers the work and depth and the busyness of this area of the council staff's workload. I had a couple of questions and I guess some points. I guess it's, you know, interesting to be kept up to date regarding the financial constraints that they're continuing to impact on applications for our planning and the new builds, et cetera, and things like that. I wonder, like, what the future will look like really in that space. It's going to be interesting to keep monitoring, isn't it? There was a couple of things around. There was an online presentation hosted by the State Planning Office on the recent release of the SPP's review. Just wondering, it was on the 10th of August. Just wondering any further insight or anything like that on that one?
Ms. Salisbury.
Thank you, Mayor, and through you. The next step is the creation of some working groups. Canberra staff have expressed interest in being part of that, and those working groups will focus on specific sort of issues that came out of the scoping paper. And there is a website that allows you to keep up to date, and I'll be happy to share that information with elected members.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Just in regards to the urban growth boundary submission, noting that Spring Farm didn't form then a part of that agreement, I guess. Was there any? Do we have any impacts in regards to the decision about that?
Ms. Salisbury.
Through you, Mayor. Yeah, look, the Spring Farm one was actually really just rectifying an anomaly, that the existing subdivision actually went across the boundary, the urban growth boundary, so it's really just tidying that up, and there'll be no change to what was expected.
Thank you. And the container refund scheme, that was an interesting one that we've had no applications to install the collection point. Again, just some more information on that one as well.
Through you, Mayor, no, that's correct. We haven't had anybody interested yet. I don't know whether anyone else has got some thoughts, but no, nothing.
So I guess just further to you, Mayor, another question on that. Like, what does that kind of look like? Like, what sort of organisation would apply and where kind of would it be possibly located or something like that, I guess, just to get some further insight?
Through you, Mayor, I don't know whether Mr. Donovan might
Mr. Reeve actually can tell us all about this.
Cool.
And you may recall when we had our waste briefing recently, we did touch on this. Yeah, Mr. Reeve.
Yes, through you, Mayor. So certainly they're going through the processes of still trying to get a provider for the container deposit scheme. So that's been going on for a little while, so it's still due to come to fruition in the next few months or so. So part of that will come down to who the successful person is or organisation is. So we've had some prelim chats with potential organisations who may wish to actually be utilising particularly our Beretta site, but also some other sites around Kingborough as well at the same time. But until they've actually established who that is, who that provider is going to be, we're not going to be having any sort of anything more than just prelim chats on that part of it. So I guess it's still a wait and see process.
Thank you. And just another question, Mayor. The livable housing provisions, that sounded like a really great provision to put forward, and I guess what were some of the highlights really around the new requirements, noting that it's a bit more than was there anything more in regards to accessibility provisions, and what does that actually mean?
Mr. De Cruz.
Through you, Mayor. The recently implemented National Construction Code in Australia calls for a new design standard called the Livable Housing Design Standard 2020. It deals mainly with the physical entry into houses and mobility within houses, houses and apartments actually. In Tasmania from 1 October 2024, all new design and construction of these building types will need to comply with this new standard unless the proposal is subject to an exemption. So it's fairly far-reaching within across Australia and within Tasmania. The intent of the new standard is for new housing stock in Australia to better adapt to a growing demand for the greater range of accessibility and mobility friendly Australian homes. Examples of designs or changes would be step-free access paths, providing wider trafficable spaces in parts of the house such as hallways and amenity areas, wider doorways, providing for future adaptions in wall framing to accommodate grab rails in amenity areas. Excuse me. The Justice Department has advised, though, there's not much information out there at the moment, but they have advised that that they'll be doing quite a big customer or community communications rollout fairly close to October 2024 to build understanding within the community about the requirements.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks for that. And just, thanks so much for the image and the numbers regarding the short stay accommodation applications, noting points on that before, but I'm really grateful that staff have provided that. That was a follow-up from a question that I asked.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have a couple of questions. First one is around 2.6, around the government's decision to amend the urban growth boundary, the one that Councillor Midgley touched on. Kimmera Council, we made a submission which included that the inclusion of Margate and Smug should be considered. However, that wasn't supported by the Minister. But I just note that the effect of the amended regional policy was that it will enable residential development proposals outside but adjacent to the current urban growth boundary that meet the eligibility criteria to be considered. I'm just curious whether this will then have an effect on some of those Margate and Smug areas.
Ms. Salisbury doesn't look convinced that she's going to give the answer.
No, through you, Mayor, I'm afraid that's one I might have to take on notice.
Thank you.
Thanks. Second question was about the applications for visitor accommodation. I think, Mayor, you confirmed that, just confirming these are all forms of short stay, not just whole house residents.
Correct.
Correct. Thanks. And the third one was 3.3 around the bushfire bunker shelters, where Kimberley Council nominated to represent local government on the bushfire bunker shelter working group, and Legat has nominated a member of the Council's Development Services team to represent Tasmania local government on the working group. Does that then mean that this person is on or just nominated, and is there any information around what they're trying to achieve?
Mr. De Cruz.
Through you, Mayor. At the moment, it's just a nomination. Local government's nominated a member of our department to sit on that board. The focus will mainly be, my understanding at this stage, is around better efficiency for approvals. It's basically trying to get them through the approvals quicker. A look at the accreditation system as well to see if it can be fast-tracked or improved. And also, but not at the cost of safety. At this stage, it's just a nomination, and CBOS will let us know whether or not that person is actually a permanent member of that working group.
Thank you.
Councillor Gladright.
Thank you. My question was related to the working group as well, the bushfire bunkers. I was just wondering, are any of the members of our community who might know quite a lot about the difficulties of getting a bushfire bunker approved, have they been invited, or will they be invited along to share their experiences, or will you be doing that on their behalf?
Mr. De Cruz.
Through you, Mayor. That would be definitely something that the nominee would be able to bring up at that working group to bring those experiences to the working group so they can better understand the challenges.
And how many councils are involved in that working group?
Just one. Oh, sorry, through you, Mayor. Just one.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions, contributions? If not, I will put the recommendation that the Development Services quarterly report be noted. It was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. I'm going to... I think we might have a short break, because I suspect we might have a longer discussion on the next item. So if we could have a break and be back here sort of at about just ready to start at 7:25. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, thank you for being on time, nearly everybody. Okay, we will thank you very much for your patience while we just had a quick break. Welcome back to the meeting. It is now 7:25 and we will recommence the open session of council. So we are on page 52, Longley Reserves Recreation Master Plan, with a recommendation on page 54. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Gladright and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Councillor Gladright.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to receive master plans at council, because it often means that there's been a lot of community consultation and that there's been a lot of considered design. And I think master plans really highlight the way council invest back into our local communities. So it was lovely to read this one, and I think there's lots of amazing improvements proposed. I think most councillors are aware that there is one element to this master plan that a couple of groups are not agreeing with, and that is the horse float parking area. So I understand that the North West Bay River Trail is proposed to start in Margate and to finish at this area. And when that is developed, it's going to be an amazing asset. I think the horse riding community, and just indeed anyone hiking and walking that trail, will get lots of really wonderful benefits. And I appreciate that a horse float parking area is required at the trailhead. It is also my understanding, though, that for that trail to go ahead, there is 1 kilometre of land which traverses private property. And anecdotally, I've heard that that property owner is not agreeable to the trail passing over that private land. So I have some questions about how imminent this trail is indeed. So given that we don't know whether this trail will definitely be going ahead or not, I don't see any urgency in putting in the horse float parking at this stage. It is also my understanding that council were storing some gravel in this area, and then once they had used the gravel, the remnant gravel was forming this informal area that is now being proposed for the parking. So in my mind, it hasn't necessarily been strategically looked at, and instead it was just seemed like perhaps an appropriate place. So I would like to propose an amendment. I know I have to get a seconder before I can speak to it.
You can't move an amendment because you moved the substantive motion.
Right, I completely forgot that. So I won't be moving the amendment.
No, but you can.
I can speak to it and see.
You can suggest as to what your amendment would
be.
All and
right.
Then somebody else might move it on your behalf if they agree with it.
Lovely. Okay. So, yes, in terms of the amendment, I would be suggesting that it might be a good idea that we endorse this master plan minus the one element, and if and when the trail goes ahead, we can at that point then assess where an appropriate spot might be, and it might be that it's decided that this is the appropriate spot, but for the time being that we allow that area to be grassed over again. And would anyone like to help me out?
Okay, let's just, I'll take the lights. Councillor Dean.
I'm supportive. I just want to clarify what is being suggested there. Are we then committing to revitalising grassing over the area, as you suggest, and as per the communication received, that we would then also install the bollards to that area in the interim?
I don't know how to deal with this now. I think, what would your answer have been, Councillor Blaybart?
I would have moved that we endorse the plan. I would have moved that we endorse the plan omitting point one in the key of the map.
I think what Councillor Dean's question is then, are you also then taking it further to suggest the bollards be installed and rehabilitation take place? Or was that not going to be part of your proposed amendment?
Yes, I suppose that would make sense.
Okay.
That for now that we go back to the original one of these master plans which didn't include the horse float parking in that area.
Okay.
I think it's starting to get confusing because I am supportive of keeping the master plan as it is because it's an if and when situation for that number one, keeping it in there because that's the updated one. But I would be supportive of an amendment that would seek in the interim for us to take, if and when we decide to take funding, that it stays in there, that we do commit to regrassing the area if funding comes available to then do so. But I think the purpose of this is that, it's very, as it's written there, if and when the trail comes into existence with that section, that we are committing to providing that horse trail, which is what I'm supportive of. But it's more about the interim period.
Okay. Further contributions, Councillor Antoli.
Can I ask, potentially through you, Mayor, this level of detail and this sort of minutia that we're discussing, is it an appropriate discussion at this point of a master plan when all of these things are subject to budget constraints? If I could get a comment.
Look, I believe it is, given that this issue has been raised by some of the
the local residents and some of the stakeholder groups in relation to the master plan. So this is the opportunity to provide commentary and discussion around that aspect of it.
But the moving of gravel, and surely council knows how to properly dispose of gravel used for parking and that it's not going to be just dumped by the side of the river. Is that this level of detail we're meant to be going in here?
Not that. I don't think that that's actually the level that we're trying to get down to. I think my understanding of what has just been suggested is that there was just some concerns around... The background to this is that there were concerns from the residents in the area about the fact that during some roadworks being done, there was a large amount of gravel stored in this particular area, and then it was removed when the roadworks finished. There was some residue there. It was all meant to be rehabilitated, and then there was a massive downpour, and that all kind of just it went everywhere again, and it just created an unusable area. So that's, I guess, the background that happened early last year, I think, from memory. So I think that's why we're now down this path, because the local community have raised it. But, it's not for us to start directing council staff in terms of where the gravel should be placed and how the gravel should be disposed of in for the purposes of rehabilitating this site. That's an operational matter that they would be left to.
Because we have received correspondence from the community requesting us, due to this motion on the agenda, to discuss this level of detail, and I think it's created potentially some confusion within our councillor community that this is probably not the level of operational influence that we should be having mm-hmm. over master plans. Mm-hmm. And I think it just helps to clarify that it's a plan that is subject to operational budget needs over the next 10 years. It's a long-term master plan, and I just would hate us to get bogged down in details based on well-meaning, well-intentioned, fair-minded lobbying from the public at this point in the meeting tonight. Yep. That's the only reference I try and make on all of this.
Yep, thank you. Councillor Fox.
Yes, I'd echo those thoughts. I think a master plan has been prepared for us by a consultant. There are lots of points in this document which are a wish list, and for example, doing another river study. I have a river study which was done in 2001. I have a catchment management plan, which I chaired for 20 years, the catchment management committee. That was put out in the early 90s. We've got a Northwest Bay River multi-use trail feasibility study. I don't have a date on that one, but these things have been in the pipeline for decades. And to say, well, the track's not going ahead, well, that is going to go ahead. It's just a matter of time. The river is not going to be stoppable. Putting doing another study, I think, with global warming, with the flooding that's been occurring in this reserve, everything we built here should be what they call frangible. It should be able to be removed or sacrificed. And any works that we do on the riverside, on the riverbanks, may well exacerbate the problem that we've already got. We have to be very, very cautious. And to be favouring one group over the other in this point in time is probably not appropriate. It's a long-term plan, and it needs to go out to the wider community before we start fiddling around the edges, I think. It's important that the wider community sees it, and not just the people who live in this area who've been asked to have input to it. But I think it is something worthwhile. It's cost money, and it's professional, it's well written, and it's very readable, and I think we should endorse it. Considering we've had the concerns of the horse riding fraternity and those not wanting floats expressed to us, I think it's also appropriate that staff have put that in with a proviso. So I thoroughly and wholeheartedly recommend the motion before us, and would discourage any amendments. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I just clarify, Councillor Fox, one of your comments before I go to the next speaker? This master plan did go out for wholesale public comment. not just to members of stakeholder groups in the area. So, but it's just that I guess if you're putting out a master plan for a particular area, you can generally only assume that you're going to get feedback from people who have a direct interest in that area because they live there or recreate there. Yep. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Thanks for clarifying that, because I thought, yeah, the master plan had gone through quite a bit of community consultation, a lot thorough, and yes, there has been differing views and points raised on both sides, and that's great. That's what happens around the council table as well, so it's all about putting that together in a master plan where we can look forward. Just, yeah, interested in, because I had heard that perhaps there was an amendment and members of FLAG, I guess they have concerns about the proposal to use the southern section of the car park for horse float parking, which is opposite, I guess, directly opposed to their desired outcome of rehabilitation and that sort of a thing. So do we feel then that this recommendation put forward is strong enough to hold the heart of where FLAG's concerns are, and they are important, or wondering, Mayor, if you know you believe that an amendment would need to be put forward to actually strengthen that.
Mr. Smee, would you like to assist us with this, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess the motion as it stood, doesn't rule out the installation of bollards or the rehabilitation of the sites in the interim. I think it's important that in a master plan that sets out council's vision for the site, it does tell the community what is the long-term vision. Now, I do acknowledge that the river trail may not be developed to the Longley Park, you know, within a 10-year period. We would hope that it would, but as been pointed out, it does require negotiation with private landowners and it does require funding. So certainly there is an interim period until such time as the trail is developed to this point. In relation to the location, it has been strategically selected because this is the point at the park where the trail would be the entrance point. It does so happen that the current gravel parking area is in existence, albeit formally. Does this need to be strengthened? I guess the point I would make is that everything within this plan is subject to funding. Capital funding and in some instances operational funding, and those proposals will need to be brought to council as part of our budget process. So the intent, once the plan's endorsed, is to work closely with the stakeholders to determine what are the priorities and bring them to council over time. Now, if in working with stakeholders and FLAG being a key one, they go the installation of bollards to prevent entry, to prevent overnight camping, which is one of the things they're keen to see diminished. We think that's the number one priority, then that's what we would be bringing to council in the next budget, and those bollards would remain in place until such time as the actual trail becomes a reality. And as I say, you know, that may be a 5-10 year period. So in my view, I don't think the motion as it stands rules out what FLAG wants. I think it allows that flexibility and scope to provide those elements of the plan that they are seeking to see endorsed, albeit in a compromise, because FLAG have noted that the desire of track is at odds with their ultimate desire, but FLAG have said, look, we think there's a compromise here, and that is that the if and when, and in the interim we do what they would like to see. So to answer the question, I think the motion as it stands provides that flexibility.
Thank you, Mr. Smee.
Thank you. I've got further questions.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. And so just in regards to that, so there would be nothing, no bollards, whatever could happen within this budget, because I guess it's been, the master plan's been there for a while, they've had these conversations and concerns for a while. If, I don't know, council staff deemed that it was important for to look after the area, that the bollards could be in place sooner, if there's extra funds, could that be a possibility, or it definitely would be part of a budget bid next budget?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. We prepare our capital bids between now and December, and the process of determining what is the priority in this plan hasn't yet occurred. So there's been no provision in the current financial year's budget to do anything at Longley Park. It would be a process of developing the priorities and then a bid to go in for next financial year.
Thank you. A few more questions, Mayor. So in regards to that process, will you consult with some of the key stakeholders in who've been identified in this report, I guess, in regards to the focus areas? I guess, how do you determine what's a priority?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. FLAG are the key stakeholder in all of this, and we would work closely with them in terms of determining what are the priority infrastructure elements that they would like to see, and then obviously we have to weigh that up against all of our municipal-wide priorities, but certainly it would be our intention to develop a bid for next financial year, and, you know, having done the master plan, there'd be an expectation that there would be some follow-up work.
Thank you. And just one of the points around the vehicle speeds and a couple of the things that, you know, will be really no budget, I guess. What's the priority in regards to the one around, it says moderate, but, why is that moderate? When can that happen? Does it need a motion through council? What's the progress on that, I guess?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. As noted in the report, the issue of vehicle speeds really is peripheral to the plan. Ultimately, it's an infrastructure plan. However, during the consultation, vehicle speeds has come up really strongly from the community, so the consultants have included it as a recommendation. But as you say, that's a recommendation that can be pursued by FLAG and the community through other means. It doesn't require a budget allocation, and I do note that the next Kimber Community Consultative Forum have a representative from DSG attending to talk about speed limits and the criteria that are set in terms of how communities go about asking for speed limits and understanding how DSG apply their criteria.
Thank you. Just one final question. I noted as well that the Longley Waterhole has been mentioned and that has been raised. And I know it's not part of this master plan, but just while we're looking in this area, what are we looking for in regards to the Longley Waterhole? Because noting there has been some comments regarding that as well, but it didn't form part of this master plan.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. I think it's important to note that the Longley Waterhole is a Department of Primary Industries and Water asset. Council does not own the North West Bay River. That's owned by the Crown, including a riparian reserve along the river. So Council's only real involvement in the waterhole is the provision of the road that runs nearby it. We have been, I guess, responding to community requests for greater service provision around that waterhole, but ultimately we don't have any ownership or jurisdiction over it, and that's why it doesn't form part of this plan, because it's not our asset.
Thank you, and thanks for all the work for putting the master plan together, and it's great that the community has this vision and we can step forward as a council and look at what budget we can put towards over the coming years.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. And firstly, credit to the people to put the report together. It's fantastic. Just have one question, a more confirmation about the recommendation as it stands. So are we saying that the actual final master plan will have this notation to say that the area one, be the car park for the horse riders, will only go ahead if the North West Bay Trail is extended to Longley Park?
That's my understanding of it, Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, that is correct. I guess, as I said, the plan is a future vision, and I think it's important that the community understand that at some stage in the future, if and when the trail does pop out at the Longley Reserve, the intent would be to develop some horse float car parking. But in the interim, it doesn't form part of the plan.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Dean.
Look, it sounds like we're all on the same page. We're all supportive. It's some great work. Mrs. Smee's highlighted that we aren't ruling the interim measures suggested by FLAG out as it currently stands. Just to very quickly present one additional sentence to the recommendation that hopefully appeases both camps, in that we will still, obviously, if and when the trail is completed, have the horse float parking area, but in the interim, pending budgetary considerations, we will seek to rehabilitate the area. So if that could just be added in.
Oh, hang on, sorry, you can't just add it in, you'd have to propose a formal amendment.
So I need to propose a formal amendment. Yep. Would you be able to put it up on the screen, Ms. Morton? Happy to take improvements to wording. I'm here just trying to get to what Ms. Councillor Gladewright at the very beginning stated about...
Ms. Gladewright.
Sorry. About trying to get to, a scenario where both camps are kind of... Because I take Mrs. Smee's point about it is a long-term vision and we are in agreement that the floating park will be there, but just to provide some reassurance that in the interim that we will seek pending budget.
So are you happy with the wording that's on the screen at the moment? It's moved, Councillor Dean.
What do we think?
Are you happy with that wording?
Council, until the trail is built, Council will give consideration to rehabilitating the area. Look, I think it's very clear from Mr. Smee's response that there is flexibility in this, but given...
Hang on. Before you go any further, I need...
Sorry.
If you're happy with that wording, I need a seconder for the motion, then you can speak to it. So you can't because you moved the motion. Seconded Councillor Midgley. So you weren't... No, Councillor Midgley. Okay. So now you can speak on the amendment, Councillor Dean.
I think I've made my point. I think we could nitpick maybe over the words a little bit, but I think it's quite clear here that this is just about providing some reassurance to the FLAG group whilst also acknowledging that the long-term vision is to have it in there. I'm not wedded to this. I understand the points that Councillor Fox has made. This is a long-term vision, so I'll just put it out there and I'll stop talking.
Okay, so Councillor Fox.
Just about the wording, we've used the word grass there, but I thought the intent in the study is that it's natural vegetation, which might include shrubbery and trees and flood stabilisation plants rather than just grass.
Well, can
maybe
I make
it
a
should
suggest-
be natural.
Can I make a suggestion then that it's just rehabilitating the area and installing? Let's not get in the weeds. Okay. Look, I wore my rabbit brooch today so we didn't go down any rabbit holes. Seems like we're going down one. Okay, so are you happy with removing those words, Councillor Midgley? Are you happy with that? Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Otherwise, I'd like to put the amendment. Okay, so I'm putting the amendment as printed on the screen, and the amendment is to add a further sentence to the motion, and that is, until the trail is built, Council would give consideration to rehabilitating the area and installing bollards in Key 1 on Map 3, pending budgetary considerations. Moved by Councillor Dean, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour of the amendment?
Aye.
Against? The amendment is carried, so the amendment becomes part of the original motion. So we're back on the... We're now on the amended motion. So, does anybody else want to speak? Don't let me stifle debate. No? Okay. If not, I'm going to ask Councillor Gladewright if you'd like to sum up. No? Okay, I'm going to put the amended motion. It's moved by Councillor Gladewright and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We turn now to... over the page, sorry, beg your pardon. We're turning now to page 90, private works policy, with a recommendation on page 91. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Gladewright, a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to enable Council to consider the introduction of a private works policy. We currently don't have a private works policy in place, and occasionally we do undertake private works on behalf of the state government. So I trust that the officers who have prepared this have done their research, and I can't see any problems with it. I'm wondering if we need to get a little rundown from staff or... I'm happy to support the adoption of this policy.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess what was the catalyst, noting we didn't have one, but was there any particular thing that came away from our audit panel or anything like that in regards to doing this audit, doing this policy? And if I can just get a practical example of where this would be, then I can see where it is, kind of plant, equipment, labour and that kind of thing, but any sort of project, say, that's happened recently, that would be great to know.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, yes. In terms of a catalyst, we do know that this is an area that the audit department's actually been looking into for all councils, but we also notice that there is some councils, not all councils in Tassie, that do have a private works policy, but we don't have one. We don't do a lot of private works. Probably in answer to your examples there, of recent ones there, for example, we've had... Department of Parks and Wildlife actually come to us and ask us to do part of Lighthouse Road, which is partly owned by them. So that was an amount of about $70,000 or so of work. And occasionally we may get some requests from residents, so it's not just about actual service authorities or government departments. It can be residents, but that's a rarity, and that could be tied up with the fact that we may be doing some work in the area there, and there's a requirement to actually do some further work on a driveway or something of that ilk. But as I said, doesn't happen very often. It's generally going to be more to do with other government departments more than anything.
Any further discussion? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple of questions. First one, does this apply if we're doing work for other councils as well?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, yes. It's intended to actually pick up all the cases where we might do private works there. So it could be other councils, could be other government departments, could be service authorities, could be residents, could be anybody that we might be doing works for. We've tried to define the difference between where we're working with government departments, for example, as compared to residents, because they're slightly different in terms of how we might apply things. I think it's also worthwhile noting that there would be an intention for the audit department to release some guidelines, as I mentioned in the report there. So we do know that some additional information will come out probably in the next 12 months or so, which is one of the reasons why the policy's got a 2-year window on it. So when they do come out, we'll be trying to apply what those guidelines happen to be as well.
Councillor Bain.
And just on 6.11, where it talks about the private works authorised and costed according to Council's standard procedures and in strict line with this policy, is there a fees and charges schedule that you refer to, or is it done on a quote basis normally?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. It'll generally be done on a quote basis. So the first thing we'll be looking at doing is recovering costs. So then it just depends on what the works might actually be in terms of any other margins that might go on top of that as well at the same time. We've kept it fairly general within the policy itself just for that same reason I just mentioned before, that we do know there will be some other guidelines that will come out at some stage there that will provide some more information on what might be appropriate to go in there. So this is really just to try and capture those odd occasions when we are doing private works there and making sure it is going through a good governance process.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I have two questions about objective, number three, and the policy. Market prices are mentioned and acceptable profit margins. Some organisations like to articulate what they are. For example, should we put in there what market prices entail and how they are determined? Is that a level of detail that you don't want to give away? Or should that be determined to help us understand what is a trigger to a benchmark that we would say yes to a government piece of work? And I have a follow-up question on that, but I'll leave it at that one for now.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. I guess it's kept fairly general just for that reason in terms of saying there's different cases, lots of different cases that might apply there, so we will actually take each case on its own merits, if you like. Mm. So, for example, where we might be dealing with a government organisation there that is requiring some work to be done, an example I gave of Parks and Wildlife, even though that wasn't our section of road, we did have a vested interest in actually making sure we actually updated that road then, and certainly the intention was not to go in and actually say, how do we make a nice big profit out of this particular work there? The intention was to how do we actually help out in this situation, because we happen to have the resources at the time that they didn't actually have to actually provide a better benefit for the community. So that's an example of where we might be doing that. There may be other examples, though, where you'd be saying, no, it's fair and reasonable in terms of what we're doing here to actually say that there should be a profit margin that's actually entailed with what the works happen to be. Mm. So that's why I'm saying it is fairly general, and it's intended deliberately for that to give the scope for each one to actually be assessed on its own merits.
Yeah, fantastic. That's probably could potentially answer my next question, which is how the acceptable profit margin is calculated and what factors contribute to it. So you probably might not want to put that in there, because you've got financial benefits and non-financial. You've got socio-economic benefits as well. So, okay, that's good. That answers that question. So you just want to keep it a bit more open to give us more for the general manager at the time and his or her executive team to make a wiser decision. Thanks. That's good clarification.
Thank you. Any further discussion? If not, I'm going to ask Councillor Gladright if she'd like to sum up. No. So I'm going to put the motion. It's moved by Councillor Gladright and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We move now to page 96, Kingborough Community Awards Selection Committee, with a recommendation on page 97.
I'd like to move to discuss, please.
I've got a motion to move to discuss, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Carried unanimously. I asked the Deputy Mayor to move that because there's no names in the recommendation, so we just need to have a discussion about which three councillors would be interested in assisting the Deputy Mayor in selecting the award winners. Generally speaking, it's good to sort of change the membership every year or so, give everyone an opportunity to take part in this, but also have a bit of a mix of longer serving members and newer council members as well. So happy to ask for nominations. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Can I get an understanding of the commitment level? How does it work?
No, it's fine. Look, it's just pretty much once the applications come in. I think normally it's all sorted in one meeting unless the committee is seeking further information about stuff. So it's one meeting.
And what time of the year does it tend to be around?
So it'll be in about November.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Who would like to be on the committee? It's actually a really nice thing to do.
I'll nominate.
Councillor Antoli, Councillor Midgley.
But if there's more people that want to nominate, I'm happy to step down. Just saying, as well. So don't feel shy.
I don't think everybody's rushing to put their hands up. Councillor Bain.
Happy to step down.
Thank you. Okay, so I've got Councillor Bain, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Midgley. Anyone else? No? Okay. All right, so are you happy if we move out of discussion and have those three names inserted into the recommendation? Everyone happy with that? Okay, so the recommendation now becomes that Council appoints the following three councillors to assist the Deputy Mayor in the assessment of candidates for the 2023 Kingborough Community Awards. We've got Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain and Councillor Midgley.
So moved.
So I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder, please, in Councillor Glade-Wright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We are now at page 98, Financial Report for July 2023, with a recommendation on page 99. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved, Councillor Bain. Seconded, Councillor Fox. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. So before us we have the Financial Report for July 2023. It's probably worth noting that it's very early in the financial year, so the current information does have some estimates. The financial forecast is the result for 23-24 is an underlying deficit of $238,000, and this is due primarily to the impacts of the stormwater revaluation on depreciation expense, which I think is forecast to be $500,000. So it might be interesting to get some additional information on that from staff if we can.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, so the stormwater, normally we revalue our assets probably every 5 years or so. This one's been about 6 years, so it's slightly above that. In the meantime, in between revals there, we index them. So we use what available indexes we actually have to actually do that. One of the problems we've actually struck with stormwater in particular is that it's had an over and above unusual increase for the last couple of years or so. That's actually also reflected in some of our tender prices as well, with some of our tender prices coming back almost double, sometimes higher than that for stormwater in particular. So that hasn't been able to be taken into account with the various different indexing. So when we have done the stormwater reval, and it's generally done by, as the case was here, by an external estimator, they've actually had a look at the market costs for stormwater provision, and it's been significantly higher than what's been able to be addressed with the indexing over the last 6 years. So then that's obviously resulted in the figure that we've actually got. Obviously not a desirable outcome there, because you get into the situation of finding it very difficult to actually control things when you get large overs and unders, which is the case here. But there's also some limitations in terms of what sort of indexing we can actually apply each year as well at the same time. So that's where we've sort of been caught out a little bit.
Councillor Bain.
Thanks. Just a follow-up question. It's in relation to, we've got the employee costs, $91,000 under budget, primarily due to the enterprise agreement increase being delayed to August 2023. Will that be an ongoing $91,000 saving, or is that going to be caught up in any back pay arrangements?
Mr. Jones.
Yeah. Through you, Mayor. Yes, it's to do with the impending back pay, which has now been paid, and the new rates are being paid, so that will be reflected in the August results.
Thank you.
And the General Manager would just like to add to that answer.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Bain, thanks for the question. It gives me the opportunity to say that late today, Fair Work ratified our enterprise agreement, so it's now official.
Good.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Technical question, forgive me. Often when assets are depreciate, there's a tax write-off for a lot of organisations. Does that apply in situations like this with the stormwater re-evaluation?
Mr. Jones.
Through you, Mayor. Council don't pay any tax, so
I see.
It has no impact. We just depreciation comes as a cost to...
Well, you learn something every day. Didn't know that. There you go. It's a level of government. I can understand why it doesn't.
Councillor Fox.
On pages 114 and 15 and so on the left-hand column it says closed in the very top heading. Now, this column reminds me a bit of a program I watch sometimes, Would I Lie to You? Because I'm only joking. It's got true or false, true or false, down the left-hand column by every item. And I must say, I've been on council for 35 years and I never noticed this. And today I asked Mr. Jones, what was this all about? Perhaps he could explain it to the other councillors.
Mr. Jones.
Through you, Mayor. We set up projects to track expenditure on every capital expenditure item. And when a project is completed, we close it to prevent further expenditure going to that item. So that's simply a flag. The question is it closed or not? True, it's been closed. It means that the job's been finished and there'll be no more expenditure. There are some other items there which are what we call parent accounts, where we might have an allowance for design projects for the year, and that will remain closed. But as we set up new projects that we need to design, there'll be new projects opened on that. So it's simply something we use internally.
So I'm going to paraphrase that, is that true and false is not an assessment of the quality of data we're being given. Okay. Any further discussion? Councillor Bain, did you want to sum up? No? Thank you. I'm going to put the recommendation as moved by Councillor Bain and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. We turn now to page 122, appendices, with a recommendation on page 122 as well. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Gladright. Councillor Gladright.
I just noticed a mistake in the General Manager's activities for the 11th of August. It says, in company with the Mayor and myself for that meeting with the local government board, but I didn't attend that one.
Oh, the last, that's correct.
Yes.
That was Councillor Midgley, who's listed.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councillor Dean and then Councillor Fox.
Just a couple of quick questions. First one, why is it that the Environmental Services quarterly kind of report is in the appendix, whereas we had the building quarterly report in the main?
I know, I noticed that too. I am not sure. I think that might be a hand of fate. General Manager, no? Yeah. That's a very good question. You get a gold star for asking the good question of the night. We'll make sure there's some consistency because we have been putting them in appendices to try and speed up when there's a large agenda.
It's a really interesting report, but I just thought that normally. And then my only question around, because I love the diaries, on 27th of July, the GM met with Scott Banton of Tipperlea, who I believe is in charge of the new development that's happening across from Bunnings. Would it be, do you think there's any chance that Mr. Spanton is holding any community consultation around this?
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, Councillor Dean. He has arranged a community consultation at the community hub in September. The date escapes me.
19th,
thank you. The 19th of September. And that will be held after hours to enable as many residents and members of the community interested in what is being proposed on that land moving forward to attend. I believe his intention is to hold that session prior to lodging a development application.
Mm-hmm. Councillor Dean.
So in your understanding, would that information session be a briefing or an opportunity for members, because it's obviously garnered a fair bit of attention, an opportunity for community members to turn up and potentially provide some feedback or give some ideas to the developers about how the site and project might look like?
I did have a conversation with Mr. Spanton myself the week before last in relation to this, and he said that they were very keen to have it as an engagement where they could hear from the community about the sorts of retailers that would be in the centre and for any other ideas that the community has about how it would work.
That's it. Thank you so much.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Do you want to go?
We did say it was next before.
Oh, beg your pardon. Sorry, because then you turned your light off. Beg your pardon. I should look down on my thing. Councillor Fox and then Councillor Antoli.
Sorry. I just wanted to point out on page 149, the cat management program, which council has, I think the first in Tasmania, we trapped 119 cats, which is amazing, and reduced the population of cats on North Bruny by 85%. And this is especially impressive as feral cat densities in some areas, such as the Neck, seabird rookeries, were previously some of the highest in Australia. That is unbelievable, and I fully congratulate the team that's worked so hard to achieve that. I think it's really, really wonderful. And on the following page, there's an article about the Aboriginal trainee, Aboriginal Land Management Officer, Nicole King. And she has been involved with the NRM team, and they have shared their skills, and she's shared her skills. And it says that it has enabled, this sharing has enabled time to develop deeper working relationships, trust and cultural sharing by walking, working and sharing stories on country through the seasons. It has offered a pathway for genuine reconciliation and to close the gap. And that is a fantastic outcome. Mm. And I understand that she'll be continually involved in these programs through council. So congratulations to the NRMT. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. With regards to the consultation on the 19th regarding the spring farm development, I understand that also Mr. Spanton has also invited all the councillors to come along as well. So it's pretty much open to a full consultation, and I think would be, I encourage as many councillors to come as possible. It's a hot issue, but it's a good issue. It's a good news story. And on that note, I expect to see Councillor David Bain in the front row with his notebook and pen. So I'll be there to take photos.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Unfortunately, I can't make it because I'll be on my way back from Launceston from a Legat meeting, and I don't think I'll be back in time. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor, and I echo the sentiments that Councillor Fox has said in regards to this report. Like, it is one of my favourite reads to see what this part of our council area is doing, and there's some great work in that. And again, that question that Councillor Dean asked around the discrepancies around whether this report should sit in the appendix or actually come to a formal part of the council, because it is good discussions which we are able to have now. And yet, some really excellent work. That NRM conversation highlighted by Councillor Fox was just really wonderful to see that we have had that experience at council. I had a question around the clinics that are now moved back to the council chambers.
Yeah, I did see that.
And it's kind of like, were they always at the council chambers and during COVID they got moved to the hub and then they're back again? Like, I'm just wondering if there's a space issue or...
Yeah, if Salisbury can help us with that one.
Through you, Mayor, yes, they were moved to the hub and now they're just back where they were.
So where does it actually happen? Because it's not actually...
I think in here.
I think it's
in here. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I guess, is that a suitable location, like, for that, or why did we make that move from the hub?
Well, yes, it would be a suitable location. I haven't attended a session here, but I know that we tried a variety of rooms over at the hub, and... Yeah, this works well. We wouldn't be using it if it wasn't.
Yeah. The General Manager's got something to add.
Yeah, through you, Mayor, if I could just add to that answer. Part of the rationale also, my colleague may not have been aware of this, but part of the rationale in moving back to the hub was that some of the vaccines that we administer require refrigeration, and it was much easier, given that we have a dedicated fridge here for those vaccines, as opposed to trying to keep the right temperature in polystyrene or other containers at the hub.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question around the Environmental Services Quarterly Report and the water sampling. I noticed from January to 31st of March we had the poor results in Blackmans Bay.
but then it looks like from April to June we're 100% with compliant. Just wondering if that's a sign that something's been fixed or is it a seasonal thing?
It's Salisbury.
Yeah, through you, Mayor, yeah, that's correct. The sampling was continued and since then it has been clear. However, Blackmans Bay remains on the edge with the Derwent Estuary sampling. So if over summer there is an adverse result, that would, yeah, it would give it a lower score.
Mm. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I just have one more question related to water sampling, actually. I know the Howden Progress Association has asked for an extension to the sampling to be in the Northwest Bay where the Coffee Creek end is, and I'm not sure if there's been any further progression around that concept put forward or where that might sit.
Yeah. Through you, Mayor, happy to take that one on notice. Yeah.
Any further discussion? If not, I'll put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Gladride. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. We move now to notices of motion, of which there weren't any, so now we're at page 122, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley, a seconder in Councillor Dean. All those in... Yes, all those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. So that brings us to the end of the open session of Council. Thank you very much to our staff, to councillors for their contributions this evening and to members of the community who may have been watching along at home. In accordance with the Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the Council will now cease. So open session of Council adjourned at 8:20 p.m.